From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, the spring session of the Illinois General Assembly winding down, and as we sat down to record, it's not over yet. We'll discuss the push to get a new fiscal year budget and finish up other work. It's all coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler. He's a professor emeritus and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. And with us this week, we have Alex Degman. He covers the State House for WBEZ and Illinois Public Radio stations. And Alex, good to have you back with us again.
Thank you for inviting me.
So, Alex, from what I've been hearing, and I'm not at the Capitol, you are, this morning, a Friday morning, as we sat down to record, it seems as though they are now inching toward this budget agreement, something that's been a bit elusive this spring. What do we know at this point, and do we know that much?
Yeah, it's always really interesting to be on this program on the last week of session, because I usually make myself out to be either a genius or a complete buffoon. There's usually no in between, especially when it comes to things like the budget. So what we know right now is that they got to have something soon. They are coming up pretty close to the actual adjournment date, May 31st, after which it becomes more difficult to pass anything. So what I'm hearing is that they're getting pretty close to a revenue deal. There was some pushback initially earlier this session to some of Governor J.B. Pritzker's ideas to raise revenue in order to support the roughly $52.7 billion spending plan that Illinois has laid out, that the governor's laid out. Part of that, and I think the biggest point of contention right now, is the proposed increase in the tax on profits that sports books take in Illinois. He wants to raise that from 15 to 35%. And there are also a couple of other revenue things that he wants to do. But a lot of the pushback has been from members of the Democratic caucus. There are a lot of Democrats who are not necessarily seeing eye to eye on priorities, because as we've been talking about for really this entire session, priorities are starting to conflict among members of the Democratic caucuses. Money starts to get a little bit tighter, and the money from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, that is starting to run out. So what we will likely see over the next few hours, couple of days, we don't really know yet, is a lot of negotiation and some hand-wringing to get to ultimately what Governor Pritzker says must be a balanced budget. He says he doesn't want to do fund sweeps. He doesn't want to do interfund borrowing or, you know, moving forward surpluses or anything like that. So, you know, we'll see what it comes up with.
Yeah, Charlie, going back several years now, over several years, we did see some of those, what people might call accounting tricks, you know, to make the budget look more balanced or to make things work better and to get a deal through with the numbers. So not doing that, not surprising that it makes things a little more difficult here in the final days.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that Governor Pritzker has been very serious about is that we are going to have a balanced budget. We're not going to do any of those accounting gimmicks. We're not going to play games with the numbers. We're not going to inflate the revenue estimates. We're not going to undercut the cost of the programs without acknowledging it up front. One of the tricks that used to happen was when there was a difference between what the Budget Bureau said money was available and what the legislature wanted to spend, they would just say, okay, well, we'll increase our revenue asset by another $100 million or something. Or another favorite trick was, I have this program I really like, and annualize it'll cost $100 million, but we'll just start it in January and we'll put $50 million in the budget and pretend that somehow or other next year another $50 million will come so we can analyze the program. And I used to joke with sponsors. I'd say, well, how do you intend to do this? You're only providing $50 million for a program that's going to cost $100 million. Are you only going to operate it every other day? So those are the kind of tricks that were sort of legendary back in my day, which was a long time ago. And it's clear that Governor Pritzker is not going to go along with any of that, which is to his credit, because the state's credit rating has gotten, I believe, 9 upgrades since he's taken office. And so instead of being hovering near junk bond status, we're now in pretty decent shape.
Well, Charlie, it never fails to amaze me that we've known for months, you know, what the governor wanted. We've known the lay of the land for the most part when it comes to how much money the state's expected to take in and how much it's looking to spend. And yet here we are with super majorities in the Illinois legislature for Democrats and a Democratic governor. And we're dealing with this at the last minute, despite all of that, despite the governor kind of holding to his guns when it comes to the accounting methods that are being used here. It still seems surprising to me that they can't just work this stuff out a little bit earlier than they have. But I guess for somebody that's watched it as long as you have, probably not a surprise.
Oh, no, not at all. I think in the years that I was a reporter covering the legislature, and I did it for 24 years, only a handful of those years did they ever finish by the June 30th deadline, which back in the day, that was when legislation needed to be passed with just a simple majority rather than the three-fifths that is now in place for anything that passed after the end of May. So it was not at all uncommon for the bargaining, if you will, to go on that far. And as I think I mentioned before, some of the newer lawmakers weren't around here back during the time of Bruce Rauner when we had such impasses and we went without a budget for a while. So they come in a sense, when revenues were good. We had federal help. We had tax collections that exceeded initial estimates. And this year, it's kind of like back in the day when the revenue actually coming in has not exceeded what we were counting on. So it's a new, if you will, it's a time of austerity that maybe some of the folks that are only in their first or second term are not accustomed to.
Yeah, Alex, would you agree with that? I mean, I've always said the Illinois General Assembly probably is the most inefficient place to be because things that probably could get ironed out much, much faster always take a long time. They're like students waiting at the last minute to do their homework. The deadlines are what really does tend to drive them to get things accomplished, and it looks like that's the same thing we're seeing this year.
Well, and it kind of pains me to say this because I was one of those students that waited until the last minute, and that's kind of why I'm a journalist. I thrive on deadlines, and so do lawmakers. But it's frustrating for me, I guess personally, because my first year back covering the legislature was 2022 when they ended session a good month and a half early to go campaign for the 2022 election. So they can get things done efficiently if they choose to. But, listening to Charlie, I had actually forgotten that they used to go until June 30th all the time, as a matter of course, because I wasn't around during that time. So I guess maybe I should count my blessings. I mean, they could, I think, be more efficient and do things more efficiently. Yet on the other hand, I'm not in the room. I don't know what kind of negotiations are going on, and I don't know exactly what kind of opposition people are up against. So I guess that's just a roundabout way of me saying, you know, it could be efficient, but it could be more efficient, but it could be worse.
Well, we will continue to follow this. And again, we are recording on a Friday morning, so it looks like there are still going to be at least a couple of days left of session to deal with the budget. And we'll recap more when we know more of what's happening when it comes down next week here on State Week. But let's turn our attention to some other pieces of legislation, because there have been other things going on. And Alex, you reported on one piece of legislation. This has to do with reporting medical debt. I thought this was interesting. Fill us in on what this is about.
Yeah, so basically the sponsor is Democrat Maurice West of Rockford. And his whole thing is that if you have to go to the doctor or, you know, God forbid, go to the hospital in the United States, it is very expensive. And we live in a country where not everybody has health insurance. We have people who can't afford health care. And even though they can't afford it, obviously healthcare still costs money, and it costs a lot of money. So medical debt is a recurring problem. So what this bill does is it prevents any past due medical debt from being reported to the agencies that are responsible for keeping track of your credit score. Think like TransUnion, Experian, any of the credit reporting agencies that you would think of like that. However, if you have a doctor bill or a hospital bill and you put it on a credit card, that you use for things other than medical debt, like, you know, groceries or your gas bill or something like that, that can still get reported to those bureaus. So it passed both chambers. It hasn't been sent to the governor yet, but I imagine that with all of the other healthcare initiatives that the governor's put forth this year, this is going to be something that's right up his alley. I expect him to sign this. And again, the whole idea behind this bill, Rep. West says, is because medical debt's really expensive, and it can really negatively impact you when you're trying to do, you know, simple things like get a job, buy a car, rent an apartment. Credit score really impacts all that, and it's his belief that just because you got sick or had like a life-changing event, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be able to get an apartment or drive yourself to work or things like that.
Well, Charlie, Alex mentioned the governor's been very focused on some healthcare legislation this year. We've talked about this a bit on the show, what was termed the Healthcare Protection Act. And despite it taking a little bit of time, it looks like here in the final days of the session, this will get through the General Assembly onto his desk. Talk about that for a minute, Charlie, about what it does and why you think this might be an important piece of legislation.
It's called the Healthcare Protection Act. And it was one of the governor's top priorities, which he unveiled during his State of the State address and budget address back in February. Basically, it would require a whole bunch of changes in how insurance companies deal with healthcare issues. And it's intended to kind of rein in what the governor would describe as predatory insurance practices to protect consumers. One of the things it would do would be to make Illinois the first state to ban prior authorization for inpatient adult and children's mental health care. Another thing it would do would be to ban something called step therapy, where the insurance, my doctor might say, well, you need this medication. And my insurance company says, well, here's this generic. It may work. And try this before you get what your doctor says. And it's called the fail first method. And that would no longer be possible. The legislation also would require the Department of Insurance to approve rate increases by large group insurance plans and have the premiums actually kind of track with what the actual cost of providing care is. Also, it would crack down on these ghost networks where insurance companies would say, oh, yeah, here's all our providers. And then me as a patient tries to go to one of these providers that's covered, and I find out, oh, this guy retired 5 years ago, these so-called ghost networks. The bill, as they say, it passed the House last month, 81-25, and a day or so ago, it passed the Senate 45-14, and now it's going back to the House to concur in one of the amendments or the amendment that the Senate put on. It doesn't change it materially, but the House will have to concur on it, and I expect it will happen sometime this afternoon.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Along with me, we have Charlie Wheeler and WBEZ's Alex Degman. Alex, another piece of legislation getting a lot of attention, actually has almost since it first came about, and certainly since that time. Now some changes have been approved to what's known as, for a lack of a long-term name, let me just give this the acronym BIPA. Fill us in on what this is all about and what are the changes? What are they aimed at?
So this is something else that has passed both chambers of the legislature, and I'm pretty sure the governor is open to this. So we'll see what happens. But this is, like you said, this has been talked about for a while, ever since really this started getting a lot of attention after a couple of really high profile settlements. First with Facebook, there were a lot of Illinois residents that got those checks for north of $300. I didn't. I don't know why I didn't apply for that, because I was affected by this. Facebook allegedly, they settled. And the thing was, they started using facial recognition technology for photos that people posted and automatically tagged people in them. So they would show up on Facebook servers as, this is a picture of me. And they didn't get any permission to do that. And that ran afoul of the state's Biometric Information Privacy Act, which was passed in 2008. And then more recently, the Illinois Supreme Court found that White Castle could be liable for up to $17 billion in damages if the state law were to be followed. Because what happened with White Castle was they used a system to let employees clock in and out that that got their fingerprint. And they had to, employees had to use their fingerprint every time they clocked in or clocked out. And every time they did that, that was a separate violation. And violations under the act are punishable by fines of thousands of dollars. So each time, you can see where I'm going with this, there were hundreds of thousands of clock-ins and clock-outs. So that added up to $17 billion. So the Supreme Court said, you know what, lawmakers, you need to figure this out. I'm sure this wasn't your intent, so find a fix. And they did. They're still liable if they don't get a person's permission to use their biometric information in that manner. The bill passed, and what it says now is these companies are still going to be liable for a violation if they don't get permission to use somebody's biometric information, but they're only liable for the first time it happens, not every time. So that's going to be a significant cut to, like, obviously the $17 billion judgment that White Castle could have faced. And I should mention that there was a few weeks ago, White Castle did come to a settlement. They're not going to pay nearly $17 billion. But this is an attempt from the legislature to kind of stave off these types of lawsuits in the future. And I don't know, Sean or Charlie, if you've seen these ads yourselves, but I'm sure somebody listening has seen ads on Facebook, Instagram, or whatever, or even Twitter sometimes, or X, ads from attorneys advertising saying, hey, if you had your picture taken or something like this, or if you had an interaction with so-and-so company, you could be liable for damages. Contact us. And that's all related to, you know, the Biometric Information Privacy Act that Illinois has before Governor J.B. Pritzker signs this law. So it's interesting. It's an interesting piece of legislation.
Yeah, and Charlie, this is exactly the definition of what I always like to think is the unintended consequences. You knew what the problem that lawmakers were trying to address here, but I don't think most of them realize the extent of what this legislation would mean for some businesses, like Alex had laid out there. So it makes sense to try to address that.
Yeah, and this is in response to the Supreme Court kind of flat out telling the legislature, look, you got to fix this. Although it was interesting because in the stories I read, there were comments from some lawmakers that said, well, that's the way it should be. You know, and nuts to you, White Castle, and the rest of you. What, there were 30 no votes in the House. There were 13 no votes in the Senate. And a lot of those came from Republicans who were responding to concerns from business that the new bill, well, the new legislation, when it becomes law, wouldn't be applied retroactively, and there's a question of whether data centers who store this biometric information would have violated this law. So it's not perfect in the eyes of some of its critics. But it is a real step forward in terms of reducing these astronomical awards that companies could be forced to pay if they don't notify people that they're going to be collecting this data. Now, one of the things, you can get consent via an electronic signature. So that means you don't have to physically sign a piece of paper to say, yes, you can go ahead and collect this. So I think this is a very positive bill, and it'll go to the governor, and he will sign it. I'll flat out make that prediction.
Well, Charlie, also when we talk about the courts, this week another controversial piece of legislation passed very fast this spring in the Illinois legislature, wound up in court, and now a judge has weighed in on that, judge right here in Sangamon County. So fill us in. What's going on with this? This impacts elections, including the elections upcoming this year.
Yeah, and we had talked earlier about how long it takes to get stuff done, and there's all this foot dragging, and it's like a kid who doesn't do his homework. Well, in this instance, it was a change in the election law that was introduced and passed and signed into law at lightning speed. And what it would say is that if there is a legislative district in which a political party does not have a candidate running in the primary, the political party will no longer be able to fill that vacancy after the primary. And that had been the law for generations, and it was changed by the Democrats, and it would require House and Senate candidates to run in the primary if they want to appear on the November general election ballot. And so that left a number of candidates who were circulating petitions sort of out to dry. And the Democrats said, oh, this is an ethics measure so that the backroom deals by party bosses could no longer fill these vacancies. Other people looked at it as, well, this is basically the Democrats trying to protect a couple of lawmakers that they might feel or would be challenged by whoever the Republicans put on the ballot. So what happened was the Liberty Justice Center, which is a libertarian operation out of Chicago, filed a lawsuit on behalf of four of these would-be candidates, and it went before a circuit court judge here in Springfield, and she issued a law specifically blocking that provision of the legislation. The final hearing on this injunction is set for June 3rd, which is coincidentally, or maybe intentionally, the same day, which is the deadline for party officials to nominate folks to be on the ballot in November who did not run in the primary. And the judge was very clear that the legislature, in her order, she said, yeah, the legislature can change the election law however it wants, whenever it wants. On the other hand, they can't do it in midstream. And the judge basically decided that this law would do irreparable harm to these would-be candidates by not allowing them to file their petitions. That part of the law is going to be thrown out. Interestingly enough, though, the judge in her order focused on just a couple paragraphs in the new law, did not address at all, because it wasn't challenged, the other parts of this law that include the three referendums that are going to be presented to voters to try and get more attention or get better turnout in the election.
Well, just a few minutes left here. And Alex, I want to go back to you on something that's been out there for a while as well. And this has to do with some House staffers who want to unionize, and they need the legislature basically to sign off on this. So far, that has not fully happened. So get us up to date on where things stand with this here again in the final days of the legislative session.
Yeah, basically, you're right. They, at this point, need legislation in order for them to be able to unionize under state laws. It's currently written, and it does not look like, as of this taping, that is going to happen by the time lawmakers go home for the summer. So just to bring you up to speed on how we got here, in 2022, you may remember, Illinois voters approved what was called the Workers' Rights Amendment, and it's now Article 1, Section 25 of the state constitution that says that employees in the state of Illinois have the constitutional right to collectively bargain. Unfortunately, state law carves out a few exceptions, and employees of the General Assembly are one of them. Reason being, the Illinois Labor Relations Board doesn't have jurisdiction over General Assembly employees in order to conduct an election in order to certify them. And that was the snag for House Speaker Chris Welch. He thought that even though there were a majority of employees surveyed who wanted to join this union, they still needed to hold an election because it would be undemocratic to deprive them of that. So they said, okay, and it went on for a little while longer. And so eventually this legislation got introduced during fall veto session during fall veto session. And it passed the House and got to the Senate and didn't move again. Senate President Don Harmon picked it up, and it has sat in the Senate Assignments Committee since October of 23. And the Illinois Legislative Staff Association this week issued a letter / news release basically saying, you know, we're still here and we're about to turn up the heat, and it's probably not going to be great. It was a pretty terse letter. Obviously, these employees, they said in the letter that they have tried multiple times to engage with the Senate President's staff, or really the Senate staff in general, and they've either been rebuffed or they've been ignored. They are still trying to get Speaker Welch to come to the table and sit down about their concerns because, as you might recall, even though the bill passed, members of the union said, this isn't really what we wanted. There's a lot of work that needs to be done with this. And turns out nobody's really been working with them. Nobody's really been talking to them. So the so-called third reading deadline came and went on May 17th. That's supposedly when legislation is supposed to pass out of its out of the chambers in order to, go to the governor for final signature. That's the fake deadlines they put in place. I'm not really going to get into all that, but basically, that deadline came and went, and there was no further action. So they issued this news release that said, "We're not going to be silent. We're not going to go away, and we still demand this. So, watch out."
All right. Well, we'll keep following that here as the session comes to an end and see what else happens with that. Let's go now to our notes from the field. Alex, we'll stay with you.
So the Prisoner Review Board, which is essentially responsible for determining whether people are allowed to leave physical prison, there's going to be a lot of changes. And this is based on the fact that Rosetti Brand is an individual who was released from prison and then immediately went to the home of his ex-partner and attempted to kill her, but ended up killing her 11-year-old son instead. And the problem there is that she had started the process of seeking an order of protection when she found out that he was going to be released from prison. But the Prisoner Review Board didn't know that. They didn't know that there was a pending request for an order of protection against him. So they let him out, and that's what happened. Her son Jaden is now killed, and she was seriously hurt. So there are a lot of things in this bill, but the key crux of it is the training that needs to go in to the members of the Prisoner Review Board. Things like safety planning, substantiation of gender-based violence, basically learning about the Illinois Domestic Violence Act of 1986. There are a lot of benchmarks that need to be met just to make sure that the members of the Prisoner Review Board, not only do they know what their job is, but they also have a little bit more, I guess, cultural understanding of what some of these folks are going through. And it would probably make it easier to have them make a better decision going forward.
All right. And Charlie.
The Illinois House earlier this week agreed without opposition to a Senate bill that also passed that would create another state symbol for the state of Illinois. And this one would give us a state mushroom. And it's the scientific name is the Calvatia gigantea. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but I can pronounce the common name, the giant puffball. Mushroom will be the official state mushroom of the state of Illinois when Governor Pritzker signs this bill, as I'm sure he will. And so, condolences to those folks who really like the Morels.
All right. Well, that's all the time we've got for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Alex Degman with WBEC and Illinois Public Radio. And once again, we expect the Illinois legislature will be working to wrap up its spring session over the weekend. We'll have more of a recap on what took place and the state budget on our next show. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford, and join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.